I venture to say that in the congregation this morning, that most who have gathered will have read the Book of Psalms on a continual basis. I know of many that come daily to this psalm, and indeed to other psalms, so that they may identify with the pressure and the pain and the perplexities of human life. There is no doubt as we study the psalms that we find that they are gracious in their intimacy, they are glorious in their inspiration, and they are great in their instruction. To most people, however, the thought of praise and thanksgiving seems to be the central theme of this section of God's Word. And while that is true by way of balance, there is also references to prayer and to preaching. But here in the Psalm 66, the psalmist is very keen that the world should engage in a joyful noise unto the land. He sees the praises, he sees the honour of the Lord as that which is unrestricted and unrestrained by national barriers or indeed by cultural identity. Sing forth the honour of his name and make his praise glorious. And that is a wonderful theme for us to emphasize. But you'll also notice that in the psalm, there are a number of invitations to the Lord's people. For example, in verse 5, we read, "Come and see the works of God. He is terrible in his doing toward the children of men." And that is an invitation that we would want to extend to the world today. But there is in this psalm a very personal message that I believe led of the Lord to deliver to you in my Saviour's name. And that is the words of the opening part of verse 11 and the latter part of verse 12. Do please read in your mind the opening of verse 11. "Thou broughtest us into the net." And then in verse 12 at the end, "But thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place." Now I want you to notice very carefully that the one who brings his people into the net is the same one who brings us out again. I have found as I have travelled around our churches in recent times that many of God's people are carrying wounds and hurts and bruises. It is an age when many appear to be carrying great burdens. And it is to that thought that I believe these words are particularly addressed. For some dear child of God might find themselves in a net this morning, and they need to hear a word. They need to receive an instruction that will give guidance to them. And here surely is this thought, "But thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place." Now this psalm, of course, fits perfectly into 3 points. There is, first of all, the mighty works of God, then the mysterious ways of God, and then the meaningful wealth of God. Let me just very briefly highlight these points. First of all, let us concentrate on the mighty works of God. We've already emphasized the words of verse 5, but we also could point out the words of verse 3, where we read, "Say unto God, how terrible art thou in thy works, and through the greatness of thy power shall thine enemies submit themselves unto thee." And that in itself is a tremendous encouragement to the Lord's people. For we find that in this generation, there are many that are seeking to provoke against the witness of the church. The enemy seems to be strong. The enemy seems to be making progress. But the Bible is telling us something of great significance, that the day is coming, and we believe it is coming very soon, when God's enemies will submit themselves unto him. That great thought in the book of the Revelation, chapter 6, reminds us of the kings of the earth and the great men and the bondmen and the free men hiding themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, pleading for those very structures to fall on them and to hide them from the face of him that sitteth on the throne. The day of God's triumph is surely at hand. But for us at this moment in time, and especially for those who are struggling in their spiritual life, these words are of great relevancy. Thou broughtest us into the net, but thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place. We can see, therefore, the mighty works of God historically. If you look at verse 6, you will find that over 400 years of history are brought together. He turned the sea into dry land. They went through the flood on foot. There did we rejoice in him. Here, of course, is that moment in the history of Israel whenever God, in his gracious providence, was bringing his people out of the land or out of the bondage of Egypt. But isn't it remarkable to recall that whenever the brethren of Joseph sold him to the nomadic merchants, that they could not have foreseen God's plan and God's purpose in the whole thing. As far as they were concerned, they were acting out of jealousy and envy against their brother. And yet as we read on into that wonderful story, we find that Joseph said to his brethren as something that has got to be classified as one of the most remarkable statements in the entire Bible. He said to his brethren, whenever they came down to Egypt and he was revealed to them, but as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. You see, the God who brought Israel into the net was going to bring them out again. But things didn't work out instantly as they might have thought. Because after the evening of Passover, the children of Israel made their way at the direction of God towards the Red Sea. But whenever they got there, they were faced with a cul-de-sac. The sea was before them. On either side were the formidable mountain ranges of Sinai, and behind them were the gathering dust clouds of Pharaoh's elite army. And it seemed as if everything had gone wrong in their life. And then suddenly, God stepped in. And God, we might say, at the midnight hour, was pleased to divide the Red Sea so that the one who had brought his people into the net was ready now to bring them out again. Now, it may be in your life this morning that you are facing a cul-de-sac. There are issues in your life that you don't seem to have the answer to. And you ponder in your mind, how am I going to get through this? How am I going to get out of this predicament? The one who brought you in is the one who will bring you out. For while you may not see the Red Sea divided as the children of Israel did, we learn from the prophecy of Isaiah that the Lord maketh a way in the sea and a path in the mighty waters. And what might strike you with fear this morning, God will make a way for you. I don't know if this is true, But it could be that some of you are facing issues with regard to your health. You keep it secret, but you battle it in your mind and in your thinking. And there is a sense of fear develops as a result of that. But here is God saying to you this morning, I know all about it. I've brought you this way. And I'm going to see you through. This God does historically. But can I also point out that God's mighty works are seen governmentally as well? If you look at verse 7, you read these words, He ruleth by His power forever. I am pretty sure that most of us will say amen to that thought. The very mention of the fact that the Lord ruleth by His power forever is something that instantly excites us with confidence and with assurance. But then the doubts come. And we become a little like Peter. Whenever he attempted to walk on the waters of Galilee, then when his eye beheld the boisterous waves and felt the mighty wind against him, he began to sink. When he started to look at things naturally, then the situation overtook him. And that so often is our situation too. Sadly, at times, the heart would suggest that God's governance of the world is under threat, that His control is weakening, that He is in danger of being replaced by the creature. That is not so. And no matter what voices may be raised against God and against His Word, God is still on the throne. And the devil comes and he seeks to put thoughts into our mind. And he would suggest to us in our hour of extremity, many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. And the whole social structure of our generation is one that is geared against God and against His Word and against His people. But God is ruling by His power forever. And what you and I witness in this world, whether it is the very sensitive situation in North Korea, or whether it is the destabilizing situation in the Middle East, God is ruling. God hasn't lost control. What is that little bit of flesh and blood that sits there in his seat in Pyongyang in North Korea trying to dictate to this world? God ruleth by His power forever. And because of that, we can say that when He brings His people into the net, He'll bring us out again. Did He not do that in the lives of the three Hebrew children? Whenever the mighty king Nebuchadnezzar stood that night on the very walls of his palace and said, Behold, this great Babylon that I have built. He thought he could do what he liked with God's people. Thrust them into the burning fiery furnace. But the one who brought them in, brought them out. And could it be that you're in a burning fiery furnace this morning? Facing a trial in your Christian life, the like of which you have never experienced before, can I say lovingly to you, He ruleth by His power forever. Historically, governmentally, but also spiritually. For we read there in verse 9, which holdeth our soul in life. I find that most reassuring. I love the words of 1 Peter 4, verse 19, where Peter said, wherefore let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to Him and well-doing as unto a faithful Creator. And in that I discover that it's not me that's holding on to God, but it's God that's holding on to me. Ah, you and I would never get through if it was us that was holding on to Him. Surely within a short time, we would slacken our grip. We would release our hand from His. But now we have this blessed and this wonderful confidence in knowing that He holdeth our soul in life. He'll not let it go. No matter what test, no matter what trial, no matter what trouble comes your way, He is saying to you, though your outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. My dear child of God, He brought you into the net. He'll bring you out again. The mighty works of God. But just very briefly, we have the mysterious ways of God. I suppose the question that we all would be asking is why does God allow us to go into the net? Why does God allow God's people to suffer? Why is it that some of the finest of God's dear children, in my understanding, carry some of the heaviest burdens of life? Why should that be? The answer is here. In verse 10, for Thou, O God, hast proved us. God brings us into a place where He proves us. That has been His divine pattern. As we think of His own children, the children of Israel, and as we read of them in the book of Deuteronomy, we are told, and Thou led these, and Thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord Thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness to humble thee and to prove thee. And I'm sure that you will know in your own understanding that from the crossing of the Red Sea to Kadesh Barnea, the border of the Promised Land, it was nothing more than an 11-day journey. 11 days would have taken Israel from the Red Sea crossing to Kadesh Barnea and into the land of Canaan. It was 40 years, not 11 days. And God says it was to prove them, to know what was in their heart, whether they would keep His commandment or no. That thought, of course, is duplicated in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 13. For the Lord your God proveth you to know whether ye love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. None of us naturally like to be tested and to be proved. But that's God's purpose. That's the mysterious ways of God. Not only to prove us, but also to demonstrate His providence. In verse 11 we read, at the end of that verse, Thou laidest affliction upon our loins. That's very interesting. Because if you carry a burden that presses upon the loins, it will bend your knees. And I'm speaking personally here. That if I didn't have burdens to carry, I don't think I would be praying as I do. Sometimes we need the burden to bring us to our knees. Sometimes we need God to place affliction upon us, so that we might, like Paul, discover, my grace is sufficient for thee, and my strength is made perfect in weakness. And then these mysterious ways of God are also shown by their practice. In verse 12 we have these words, thou hast caused men to ride over our heads. I don't know about you. I don't like men riding over my head. I don't like it one little bit. But God has allowed men to ride over our heads. And instantly, I look to blame man. I look to see what man has done, where man has failed. Missing this very point, that the Lord has caused man to ride over our heads. In other words, he brings us into the net. But he's going to bring us out again. That's why we read those wonderful words. In this world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. The mighty works of God, the mysterious ways of God, just finally and briefly, there is the meaningful wealth of God. What is this wealthy place? But thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place. Can I tell you very lovingly that that wealthy place is Calvary? That's where God brings his people to. Because if you look carefully, you will notice in verse 13... That the psalmist, he immediately responds to this, and he says, I will go into thy house with burnt offerings, I will pay thee my vows. He has been brought to a wealthy place, but he is not, as it were, taken from the treasuries of that wealthy place, but rather he is saying, I will pay thee my vows. Dear men and women of God, we need to come to the cross this morning. We need to come to Calvary every day. For the one who brings his people into the net designs to bring us to this place, wherein we might say, like the apostle, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ that liveth in me. I hope you don't think me presumptuous when I say this. I do not believe that our nation will be brought into this wealthy place until it stops struggling against God. I know little about fishing. Very little. But I think I can understand this. That if a fish is caught in the net, the more it struggles, the more it is entangled in the net. Sometimes, the more we struggle, the more we get entangled. Thou broughtest us into the net. But thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place. I always remember my father, my late father, telling me a story that was always a great challenge to me. Although he wasn't saved when he related it to me, but he was telling of an experience in the 1920s when he and a dear man by the name of James White were delivering coal brick to the people in North Belfast. Coal brick was the dust of coal that was compressed together and sold to the poor people. They were doing this, and my father at 15 was helping him. And all of a sudden, a group of men came out from one of the streets, one had a gun, and demanded that James would hand over the horse and the cart and the coal brick. And my father spoke of how fearful and how frightened he was. But James handed over the reins of the horse to the man, and the man said, "Get out of the district as quick as you can with your friend." They had gone but a number of yards whenever the man called them back. My father said, "I thought we were going to be shot." But the man said to James White, "Your father, by any chance, wouldn't have the name John White?" James said, "That's my father's name." "Do they live in Lupland Street?" "Yes." "Well, I want to tell you something," the man said. "Your parents were very, very good to my parents in a time of great trouble. They've always spoken about John White and his kindness." "Now," he said, "you take the horse and your cart and your friend and leave the area." James said to the gunman rather nervously, "How did you know I was John White, John White's son?" And he said, "I watched you and your friend going down the street. I said to myself, that young man looks like John White. He walks like him. I wonder, would he be related to him?" When God brings his people to a wealthy place, we walk like him. Thank you for listening.